It's Tuesday, September 2nd, 2008, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Well, hello there, dear stashers. It is great to be back. And I got so many emails from those of you who had missed your daily audio stash over the past couple of weeks. I'm sorry I couldn't bring it to you, but it really made me feel good to know that I'm such a part of your everyday lives. And well, it's good to be back. As you know, I was down in Seattle for the Seattle Hemp Fest, and then following that, I went to Denver for the Democratic National Convention. So in the space of 15 days, I have traveled 2,862 miles by car. The downside of traveling by car, of course, is how long it takes. The upside, no airport security. Anyway, we had a good time down in Denver, and I got to blog along with the team from Pam's House Blend, which is an award-winning gay and lesbian blog. If you want to check out my exploits in Denver, just log on to pamshouseblend.com and scroll through until you find the post from Radical Russ. I'm telling you, I got a ton of audio, video, and pictures, both from HempFest and from the Democratic National Convention, so I'll be trickling those out on the stash as I can get them processed here at the West Coast Media Headquarters. Now, for today's daily audio stash, we're going to do a recap of the Democratic National Convention and the role marijuana played in it with Mason Tvert of Denver, Colorado's Safer Choice. You know them from the group that got marijuana legalized in the city of Denver through the Safer campaign. You can check them out at saferchoice.org. Then we're going to follow that up with an interview with Michael Henning, who's the director of the new movie Hempsters Plant the Seed. This is a fantastic documentary I got to see in Portland, Oregon here when they screened it at the Baghdad Theater and got myself a copy as well. And the documentary features Woody Harrelson, Merle Haggard, Willie Nelson, Gatewood Galbraith, lots of people involved in the hemp movement, and specifically chronicles the lives of seven different hemp activists, including Alex Whiteplume and Julia Butterfly Hill, who are fighting to re-legalize industrial hemp in this country. So check out that interview with Michael Henning coming up at the end of the podcast, and go to the movie's website, hempsterthemovie.com, if you'd like to get your hands on a copy. All right, everybody, it's been a long time, so this time we better load up a double gravity bong full of AK-47. It's been a while. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world. In our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. McCain's vice president pick, Palin, inhaled, but still wants to jail you for inhaling. From CBS News. Alaska Governor Sarah Palin is known as a staunch social conservative. She's a lifelong NRA member, belongs to an anti-abortion rights group called Feminists for Life, and opposes civil unions. But the self-proclaimed hockey mom had some youthful indiscretions. Palin has said she smoked marijuana, but didn't enjoy it, and doesn't smoke anymore. She told the Anchorage Daily News in 2006, quote, I can't claim a Bill Clinton and say that I never inhaled, end quote. At the time, marijuana was legal under Alaska's liberal drug laws. A 1975 Alaska Supreme Court decision allowed adults to possess small amounts of marijuana for personal use. In June 2006, a law signed by then-Republican Governor Frank Murkowski recriminalized the drug. The American Civil Liberties Union later sued the state, alleging that the law violates Alaskan's state constitutional right to privacy. Palin has said she doesn't support legalizing the drug, fearing the message it would send to her five children. And that message would be what? Don't smoke marijuana, kids. You might grow up to be mayor, governor, and a vice presidential candidate someday. Considering the unplanned pregnancy of the unmarried teenage daughter of the Alaska governor, who would outlaw all abortions, even in the cases of rape, incest, or the mother's health in danger, this Alaska governor who would mandate abstinence-only sexual education for your kids needs to work on her own messaging to her own kids before she casts aspersions on the message of legalized marijuana. Sarah Palin had the good fortune to be in Alaska, where personal marijuana use is a privacy right under the state constitution. She didn't face arrest for her personal use in her youth. Had she been arrested, she'd have a criminal drug conviction on her record. That would have made it much more difficult for her to become mayor or governor. Instead of vice president nominee Palin, she'd be PTA hockey mom Palin, still scratching out a living as a small-town Alaskan sportscaster. Now, don't think I'm giving the Democrats a pass on this either. If Barack Obama had been arrested in his personal use of marijuana and cocaine in his youth, instead of the first African-American presidential nominee, he'd be Barry the Janitor. Of 550 high school athletes drug-tested in Bullitt, Kentucky, one was positive. From the Courier-Journal, Louisville, Kentucky. Only one Bullitt County high school student tested positive for drugs last school year, though nearly 550 tests were given. Said Jamie Goldsmith, the district's director of Safe and Drug-Free Schools, quote, "It's great news. It dispels some of those rumors that it's running rampant," end quote. The urine tests screen for marijuana, amphetamines, steroids, ecstasy, hydrosol, PCP, methadone, barbiturates, benzodiazepines such as Xanax, opiates, cocaine, propoxyphene in painkillers such as Darvon, and alcohol. The one positive test was for alcohol, Goldsmith said. This year, all middle and high school students in the district will undergo drug tests if they play a sport or participate in a competitive extracurricular group. School board members voted to expand the testing program in March. Parents whose children don't play sports or participate in competitive activities can also have them tested by entering them into the volunteer pool, Goldsmith said. There are penalties for testing positive. Students who fail the test must sit out 20% of the season and pass another drug test before returning, Goldsmith said. After a second failure, the student must miss the whole season and be tested each month for a year. Students who fail a third time are banned from competitive programs for the rest of their middle or high school careers. Students who fail any tests also must undergo drug counseling. Let's see. One out of 550 tests positive. A drug test costs about $50 for that school district, so therefore, that one positive drug test costs $27,500. Meanwhile, we've got teachers being forced to reach into their own pockets to buy paper and pencils for their students. How many school supplies could you buy with $27,500? Studies show that getting your kid into extracurricular activities is one of the best ways to keep them away from using drugs. So if a kid fails a drug test, the idea is to get them out of their extracurricular activities? What about the kid who may be smoking pot but may also want to join the football team? Well, he knows that pot stays in your system for a long time, so even if he quits, he might test positive and face that embarrassment. So why bother trying out for the team at all? Note also that the one positive test was for alcohol. Kids know that alcohol can't be detected after just a couple of days, but marijuana can be detected for weeks. So, given the choice of dangerous alcohol versus mild marijuana, these drug tests motivate them to pick the more dangerous drug. Same goes for most of the drugs you're testing for. They fade within a couple of days. And not to mention the drugs you're not testing for, like huffing glue or solvents. Finally, it's not the kid who's trying out for the debate team or the basketball squad who has the substance abuse problem. It's the kid who always shows up late to first period or is frequently absent. So pat yourself on the back all you want, Mr. Goldsmith, for there not being a drug problem, quote, running rampant among your star athletes and gifted students, but those tests say nothing about the majority of students in your school who do not participate in extracurricular activities. Amy Winehouse suffers from marijuana poisoning. From the Ghana News. Amy Winehouse's hospital dash in July was the result of marijuana poisoning and not a reaction to medication, a tabloid report has claimed. The rehab singer was admitted to a London hospital on 28th of July after falling ill at her home. Her representative subsequently released a statement blaming her condition on an adverse reaction to medication she is taking to help her kick her drug addiction, which the star's father Mitch has also backed. But now, the Sun newspaper is claiming Winehouse had, in fact, become sick after allegedly smoking pot for more than a day. And pals fear Winehouse's reported addictions will leave her needing medical help for years to come. A source tells the publication, quote, Mitch does everything he can to protect his daughter, but his explanation for Amy's hospital dash in July was simply untrue. She had smoked an inhuman amount of hash, which resulted in acute cannabis poisoning. You have to take a shitload of pot to suffer that severe a reaction. It's thought she had been smoking it for 36 hours. She is in need of years of psychiatry and medical treatment if she has a hope of fully recovering. End quote. Acute cannabis poisoning? Tell me exactly how you poison someone with a substance that is not toxic. This is the kind of shoddy journalism that helps to keep marijuana illegal. She had an adverse reaction to smoking an enormous amount of hash, but that's not a poisoning. It might be an overdose. If anything, it's an allergic reaction. Given the drugs and alcohol that Winehouse is known to abuse, perhaps her friends and family should rejoice that she's taken to the safer drug, cannabis.
Marijuana is an addictive drug, which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
San Bernardino County gets kudos for seeing through the smoke. From the San Bernardino County Sun.
The Inland Valley Drug-Free Community Coalition supports San Bernardino County's decision to ask the state Supreme Court to intervene on State Attorney General Brown's demands that people be allowed to smoke pot. San Bernardino County was not fooled by a small group of pro-pot users who marched in mid-August demanding the county issue pot ID cards. The failed protest attempt by pro-drug legalizers is reminiscent of a drug culture craze a generation ago. Those days are long gone, and so is the perceived innocence of marijuana. Thankfully, the leaders of San Bernardino County saw through their smoke.
The state of California legalized medical marijuana by a 55% vote. The state ordered all California counties to begin voluntary ID card systems. Two courts have now told San Bernardino and San Diego counties that they need to begin the card system. So don't puff yourself up by claiming it is just a, quote, small group of pro-pot users that San Bernardino is rejecting. It's the rule of law San Bernardino is rejecting.
However, in Riverside County, where the Board of Supervisors approved medical marijuana ID cards, more than 1,000 ID cards have been issued. Yes, nearly 1,000, and at taxpayer expense. This angers citizens, especially in tough economic times, when funds should be diverted to legitimate services for the community. The fact that taxpayer dollars are being used to pay county employees to issue these cards is beyond absurd. Nonetheless, a small radical group of drug legalizers got their way. Riverside County made a mistake, and we are confident they will learn from this failure and join San Bernardino and San Diego counties in the courts to fight back against the failures of Proposition 215.
So, it's reprehensible to have county funds diverted from legitimate services, as if caring for sick and disabled Californians and obeying the mandates of the state aren't legitimate, but it's perfectly okay to divert five times as much funds to continually take this case back to appeals court for loss after loss.
Marijuana use brings harm to our children and our communities. Our hearts go out to anyone suffering from an illness. However, in the case of marijuana, we have seen time and again how the drug legalization movement hides behind the sick for their own selfish cause.
Funny how I never hear any of these sick people, helped by medical marijuana, demanding an end to medical marijuana laws because healthy people are getting high. The sick and disabled people don't seem to feel like they've been used or hidden behind. These anti-drug advocates seem to be saying, sure, marijuana might help the cancer patient, but because healthy people claim insomnia to get high legally, the cancer patient should have to suffer.
Many Californians know of someone who has ruined their life with marijuana use. Most Californians know somebody whose life was destroyed by substance abuse. Enough is enough. Our communities have sufficient problems with drunken drivers, meth addicts, and prescription drug abusers. We don't need an outcast of legalizers harming the next generation.
News for you, the next generation is already smoking weed. Everyone who wants to smoke pot is. Except now, in California, many of those pot smokers are contributing to your state's general fund instead of a teenage pot dealer's PlayStation fund. Many of those pot smokers are purchasing pot in a safe, taxed retail environment instead of risking arrest and violence in a black market environment. Does anyone really think legalized marijuana is going to lead to a huge increase in pot users? Is the writer only holding back on smoking pot because it's illegal? No. Were it legal, he'd still not smoke it. Nor would the majority who don't smoke now. Maybe a few timid experimenters would try it, once it is free of legal consequences, but they will be matched by the ones who won't get a hold of it, because dealers will dry up and the retailers will check IDs. All legalizing marijuana will do is shift the economy of pot from black market to legit. Furthermore, with the choice of legal weed, maybe some of those drunks, tweakers, and pill poppers will switch to marijuana and cause far less harm to society.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Tuesday is our look at your government at work here at the Audio Stash. While the inevitable re-legalization of cannabis hemp will have to happen at the federal level, the steps leading to that destination take place at the state and municipal levels. We focus in on the initiatives, bills, and amendments regarding cannabis across all 50 states and what activists like you are doing to enact a positive reform to our cruel and outdated marijuana laws.
Body dies, the ego cries, the first day seeing the creatures burn. It's an honest day's work, yeah, 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 yeah.
If you're working hard to make an impact in your city and state, please email us at stash@normal.org and let's share your local efforts with the worldwide cannabis community. Together, we can affect our government at work.
The afternoon pollution rises high into the sky. How can we still deny?
As you fans of the Stash know, I was down in Denver for the Democratic National Convention last week, and I wanted to catch up on some of the marijuana-related themes that went down there with Mason Tvert, who's joining us from Denver, Colorado. You know Mason from the SAFER organization at saferchoice.org. And Mason, welcome back to the Stash.
Thanks for having me, Russ.
Well, let's tell our listeners just a little bit about the intersection of pot and politics that went down at the Democratic Convention and what you guys down in Denver did to bring the issue up for the Democratic politicians and delegates that were down there.
Sure. You know, this was a really exciting convention since it was the first time in history that a convention was held in a city that's voted to make marijuana legal. And moreover, a panel that was created in the city as a result of one of these ballot initiatives actually called for no marijuana arrests, again, a first in history. And leading into the convention, there was just a ton of news coverage, not only in Colorado media, but in the national media, the Washington Times, Fox News Channel, and CNN and so on were talking about this. And in the end, it really led to there being more discussion of marijuana surrounding a national convention than ever before in history.
We'd had somebody managed to get a question in front of Speaker Nancy Pelosi, I understand.
Yeah, there was a short segment on, I believe it was CNN, in which Nancy Pelosi took questions live in front of the cameras, and someone asked her when marijuana would be legal or why it wasn't legal. And basically she said, you know, she acted like a typical politician and said, well, you know, she doesn't expect marijuana to be made legal anytime soon for recreational purposes, but it has support for medical marijuana. But she, you know, once again, didn't really explain why that hasn't been pushed through, because it's something that I think many people think she could push through if she wanted to as the Speaker of the House, and she just hasn't. So she was certainly put on the spot, but she encouraged people to contact their legislators and urge them to start supporting these changes.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, the people are way ahead of the politicians on the issue when you look at all the polls of the support of marijuana and decriminalization.
Absolutely. They're way far ahead, and it would really, you know, the Democrats could have a lot to gain if they would just you know, swallow their pride, or at least step up to the plate and you know, make some bold decisions on this issue.
Do you think maybe some of this has to do with maybe them just trying to keep that issue down for now, you know, get Barack Obama elected, and then once that happens, do you think maybe we could get some traction on this?
It's an interesting concept, and, you know, but at the same time, history has shown that Democrats tend to care only about getting themselves into office and then never really doing much once they're in office. Mm. I hope that's the case. I will say that I'm neither a Democrat nor a Republican, so I'm not, you know, speaking about this from any partisan issue. I just, you know, have found that regardless of whether Democrats are in power, trying to hold on to power, or trying to gain power, they're really quite cowardly when it comes to this very simple issue.
Yeah, and it's very surprising to me when you consider that the 12 states that have legalize the medical use of marijuana, I think almost all of them are overwhelmingly Democratic in how they vote. So you'd think the Democrats would recognize that they have support on this issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't think it even comes down to whether they care if they're representing their districts. Look at here in Denver. I had a column in the Denver Post about a week before the convention pointing out that there isn't very much congressional support for these types of changes, despite the vast amount of support around the country, and calling out our representative here in Denver, Diana DeGette, who has been deathly silent on the issue, despite the fact that her entire district voted multiple times to make marijuana legal, and she just couldn't care less. So, you know, I think that a lot of times these people are just scared, or they don't see it as a priority, and they're worried it might be used against them in the future, when, in fact, that really never happens.
Yeah. Now, as far as the activities in Denver, I managed to catch up with you in a park. You guys were having a demonstration. You had your SAFER booth up and a really great portfolio you were handing out for the Denver delegates, telling them about the whole SAFER Choice message. Were there demonstrations, marches, anything else that was happening that I didn't manage to make it to?
Well, we had a booth going on in a lot of the parks, like you said, during the various demonstrations and various events taking place. The Downtown Festival of Democracy, I spoke there, and some of the events in the evenings. Like you said, we had a very nice media folder that we put together that we were giving out to members of the media, making sure that they were aware of the issue, and a lot of them did incorporate discussion of it into their blog posts, into their stories, and so on. And then there was a couple marches on the last day there on Thursday, which Safer didn't take part in, but there were a couple medical marijuana-related marches going on, much lower key than a lot of the other larger demonstrations. And that was really one of the reasons, I think, you know, why this was a successful convention. We managed to get the issue into the news, because when it comes to having a march or demonstration, this issue, marijuana, is just never going to never going to size up to an anti-war demonstration or one of these larger groups where, you know, there's so many groups out there handing out flyers and putting up posters and holding marches that, you know, the whole marijuana issue gets kind of lost in the fray. And that's why we really took the tack of trying to inject it into the news coverage so it was covered regardless of any sort of demonstration.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I remember being down there in Denver and seeing, you know, the block after block of the anti-abortion protesters. Yeah. We had the guys in the orange jumpsuits and the black hoods for the anti-torture, anti-war protests. So, yeah, it's kind of a large protest market there.
Yeah, indeed. It was a very crowded scene, but I think it went over well altogether.
What do you think we can do in the future as members of the community here, individually or as the larger groups in drug law reform, to get this issue injected directly into the political discourse of these candidates, of these conventions, maybe even to the point of making it a plank in one of the parties' what do they call those?
Platform.
Platform, thank you. A party platform plank.
Yeah, you know, it's certainly an interesting notion. What it would require is people to get involved in everyday activities, and that's certainly something that a lot of folks in this reform community have been saying for a long time, is, you know, people who support marijuana reform should try to be involved in other activities such as PTAs or their local Democratic or Republican parties or, you know, any other sort of civic group, rotary clubs, what have you. And by doing that, you're going to find a lot of other people who may be supportive of this and you know, will really be able to generate a lot more discussion, a lot more public support. Otherwise, you know, this is, as much support as we have, unfortunately, it doesn't end up being a high priority issue for a lot of folks who are involved in the political process, who are concerned about health care and the environment and workers' rights and all sorts of issues, the war in Iraq and so on, that this just generally tends to fall towards the bottom. And it's unfortunate because, as you know, I'm sure most of your listeners will agree, this is an issue that should be a higher priority, because it is causing almost more harm than any of those things.
Yeah, I like to point out, you know, that Barack Obama, he admits in his book to having used marijuana and cocaine in his youth. And had he been, you know, caught by the criminal justice system, you know, he might be Barry the janitor right now instead of the African-American nominee. And then most recently, McCain's pick, Sarah Palin, vice presidential pick from Alaska, she used marijuana up in Alaska while it was, you know, and it's legal there under their privacy restrictions. She might not be where she is today had she been caught. So it's just absolutely stunning to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's usually something that I say when asked about the gateway theory. You know, reporters constantly ask, well, what about the gateway theory? And I say, well, you know, look at the people who have used marijuana in our country. We've got Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, Newt Gingrich, Clarence Thomas, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Obviously, for a lot of people, marijuana is a gateway to success.
Exactly.
And these people clearly aren't, you know, heroin addicts now. So I think there's something to be said for the vast numbers of people who use marijuana responsibly and have no problems as a result.
So that's what we need to do, is to get ourselves injected into the political process, get more vocal supporters of marijuana involved into these, you know, these caucuses and these delegations and so on. And surprisingly enough, you know, I went around and met a few of these people, bloggers and reporters and some of the people involved in the political stuff there at the convention. There's a lot of silent support out there. I had people saying, oh, I listen to The Stash, I love what you're writing. I'm like, well, why aren't you standing up a little stronger for what we believe in on The Stash? So
absolutely,
we'll keep pushing that. Well, Mason, thank you for all you're doing out there in Denver, Colorado. I want to encourage people to check out saferchoice.org. It's a great message they've got going there, and it worked really well in Denver. And Mason, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit NORML.org today.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. I've been talking with the crew from Suburban Noise Records, and I told them that I saw a poster for the Strange Noise Tour coming through Portland. One of my Stash favorites, my homie the Dirtball from Bend, Oregon, is on the tour, along with some other heavyweights, including OPM, who you'll hear from on this Friday. Well, James at Suburban Noise also let me know that Sendog, a former MC with Reefer Rap superstar Cypress Hill, has a new debut solo album dropping at the end of this month called Diary of a Mad Dog. So I pulled the strings and worked the Stash Mojo and got my hands on a pre-release copy of Sendog's latest. So now it's time for some slammin' rap from the Cuban-born Senen Reyes, a.k.a. Sendog, who fronts the entire album with only minimal help from a few Cali pals like Tangled Thoughts, DJ Ace, Johnny Richter of the Cottonmouth Kings, and B Real, his former partner in Cypress Hill. The opening track, Fumble, incorporates rock, techno, house, and rap with Sendog's eclectic groove, where he raps about having it all and then having nothing, and what you've got to do to get back on your feet, survive, and thrive. For more on Sendog, check out his MySpace page, and the album Diary of a Mad Dog drops on September 30th. You can get more on that at Suburban Noise Records website. We've got links to both of those at our website, stash.normal.org. Unfortunately, I don't have an MP3 download for you since this is a pre-release copy. You'll have to wait till the end of the month. Sorry about that. But you can enjoy it right now here on the Daily Audio Stash. This is Sendog with Fumble.
I feel no hope, like I'm walking on a tightrope. And things be way too much, don't know if I can cope. Don't even wanna eat, or even go to sleep. Sometimes this shit don't knock you right back off your fucking feet. That's what they call that stress. You let it get the best. Beat your ass up on the daily and won't never let you rest. Can't help it, I'm so pissed off at myself, not all of y'all. Know I did good and I did some wrong. That's the reason for this song. Visitations with my kids. Got my gig and I'm doing it. But there was a perfect star and a gang of other shit more. Fucking dropped my life before, and that shit became a bore. But I'm a man, I got my pride. Sometimes I keep it inside. Right now I can't deny. Sometimes I just wanna die. I'm standing on the outside, trying to figure out the how to fly. Know I did good and I know I tried. I'm gonna beat this shit wrong fly. So I pray to the Lord all day. Please help me change.
Hey, how's it going? My name's Will. I don't work at a used record store. I don't own an iguana, although I'm sure they make great pets. I don't have dreadlocks or play the acoustic guitar. I can remember quite well, thank you, and no, I don't constantly have the munchies. When 4:20 comes around, I've still got 40 minutes of work left. I've never hit a girl on a bike with my car or shot my friend with a shotgun. I've never had to apologize for letting a girl I was watching drown in a pool while I was getting high because, duh, I wouldn't be getting high if I was around children. I'm a regular guy who works regular jobs, just like the majority of all Americans who use marijuana occasionally and responsibly. My name is Will, and I'm normal.
There's a brand new movie out detailing the lives of seven activists involved in trying to re-legalize industrial hemp in this country, and we're very pleased here on the Daily Audio Stash to be joined by the director of this documentary, Hempsters Plant the Seed, Michael Henning, joining us by telephone. Michael, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you.
So this movie, Hempsters Plant the Seed, all about the farming of industrial hemp and the issues around it. And I was speaking to the producer, Rod Pittman, and he was telling me that this movie was 11 years in the making. What was the 11 years? How did that come about?
Well, I call it a living film. I think as long as hemp is illegal to grow in the United States, this film has a purpose. And it's gone through many different phases, and as things developed, we would go back and we would do, like, second interviews with people that were in it, Willie, Woody, Merle Haggard, some other people, so we kind of update it. And recently, I ran into a guy named Dusan Harmick, who used to live in Portland. And still to this day, I've never met him in person, but he did a trailer just out of the goodness of his heart. And I looked at the trailer and my jaw dropped. And it's on our website. I was like, wow, this guy's got his finger on the pulse. And I just, with total trust and faith, I sent him everything. I sent him all my footage, everything. I said, can you update this? And his cut is just, it just blew me away. I mean, even his choice in music was right in line with the way I feel about the music that fits the show. And so we have a whole new cut. And it kind of gave it new life, and we decided to get back out there with it again. It really is it still is in a form that we would call a test screening. We want people's feedback, and you know, anybody who can make it, we'd love to hear what you think. Or we're actually handing out questionnaires, you know, to make it service as a test screening.
Okay.
But you know, what a vast subject! It covers so many bases. I was recruited to direct it. At the time, I wasn't what I would call myself as a hempster. By the way, that term comes from I went to an anti-hemp DEA meeting that they were having that was going on at the same time that the North American Industrial Hemp Council was having a meeting to promote hemp, and I kept hearing the DEA refer to pro-hemp activists in a derogatory way as hempsters. It was kind of like a put down. Well, the hempster's this and the hempster's that. And I thought it was perfect. I thought, well, this should be the title. You know, for those who remember the term in the 60s, you know, hippies were called freaks in a put down way. And then it was turned around as a cool name, you know. So
yeah, when I hear the term hempsters, it reminds me of the Merry Pranksters too, a little bit.
Totally connected with that. There even is a product line out there called the Merry Hempsters, which we'd like to hook up with them and get some of their product at our screenings. But that's where it all comes from. And also it plays on the word hipsters. You know, there's a lot of underlying meaning to it. But when I heard him putting down pro-hemp activists in a negative way, saying the hempsters, then I thought, well, this is the perfect title. And now if you go to, like, HIA, which is Hemp Industries Association, or Vote Hemp, when their newsletters go out, they'll say, Dear Hempsters. So it's reversing like it should.
That's a good thing to hear. Now, as you were filming all the stories that are involved in this movie, I mean, you worked with Alex Whiteplume out there at the Oglala, or at the Lakota Sioux, Julia Butterfly, who was sitting in the trees and so on. What did you find to be the most compelling or shocking story when you were investigating all of this, all of these hempster, characters?
Well, you know, what we did is we focused on seven activists and decided that there was enough films made about hemp, the plant, but not about the activist. And so each one of them has a pretty compelling story. I almost wanted to title the film Direct Action, because really where everybody was coming from was what I call conscientious civil disobedience, where you're purposefully challenging the law and then bringing it to the attention of the public. Mahatma Gandhi was famous for it, and we start our film with Woody Harrelson doing that. But if I had to just nail one down to answer your question, I'd have to say it's Alex Whiteplume, because he represents the Lakota people, which are the Sioux Indians, and he's a family guy. You know, he's got horses. He lives out there. They have their own language. They have their own police force. They have everything that is required to be a sovereign nation. And they signed a treaty in 1868 with the United States government that was ratified. People always bring up, oh, well, it was a treaty, but was it ratified by Congress? And this treaty was ratified. And it clearly says in the treaty, anybody can go read and get it online, the Treaty of 1868, Lakota Sioux Treaty, it basically says put down your weapons and become farmers. Huh. And so they're doing that. And they're farming a crop that's being grown 60 miles north of the reservation up in Canada. Canada's in their, 10th commercial year. And the Drug Enforcement Agency seems to think that they have the right to interpret treaty law. And they come in and cut down the crop that the Lakota Sioux were growing. And they allowed it to happen out of fear of, well, if we contest this, we'll be arrested. And we filmed it. I had to put a guy out there on the reservation for 3 months to stake him out to see if we could actually get this on film. And the interesting thing you'll see in the film is when they're cutting down the crop, they're using weed eaters. And they're chopping it at the base. The seeds are falling to the ground. Everybody knows that you're not killing the plant. And it's going to grow back next year. And this, they've done it twice now. And, the fear tactic is that Alex would go to jail if he didn't cooperate. They claim that the Controlled Substance Act of 1973 trumps the Treaty of 1868, which, it's crazy. What's happening is that the Drug Enforcement Agency is getting $1.05 per plant that they turn in. It comes out of the War on Drugs budget, $500 million a year, and they get $1.05 per plant. So in a field of hemp, you have thousands of plants. The most a Canadian farmer is getting for harvesting his acre is $350 to $400 an acre. But if you were to count each plant in that acre, you'd have thousands. So the DEA is really the most successful hemp farming group in America, because they're getting thousands of dollars per acre. And you'll see it in the film. They wrap them in bundles of 20. They get their money, and then they burn it. Wow. They don't even use it for its purpose, which is, fiber, fuel. You just follow the money.
Yeah, exactly.
If hemp were to become legal, they would lose 99% of their income from the war on drugs. It's called the Federal Eradication Program. They're actually trying to eradicate the plant from the earth. It's called the Federal Eradication Program. 99% of what they bring in is feral ditchweed. It's hemp. Only 1% of the intake that they bring in for this war on drugs attempt to eradicate the plant is actual smokable marijuana. So 99% is quite a bit to have taken out of their budget. The latest buzz thing I've heard is that marijuana is kept illegal because of hemp.
Yeah, we mentioned that with Rod as well, is that and it always strikes me as odd that the Drug Enforcement Administration is in charge of eradicating something that is not a drug.
it's unbelievable. I mean, look at it like this, and this is why we want to start touring this film to colleges around the country, because we think if we came into brought this to a college campus for the purpose of discussion and debate, that it would just be undeniable that the DEA stance that they can't recognize the plant from marijuana is a joke, because the Canadians grow it. They can tell the difference. 30 nations around the world grow hemp, and in each one of those countries, marijuana is illegal. So every law enforcement agency of the nations of the world, 27 or 30 nations that grow it, can tell the difference. But the United States of America, the the land of the free and the home of the brave. We can't tell the difference. I mean, come on. It's a joke. And my friend Gatewood Gelbreth, who's in the film, who is, by the way, the singular activist in the film who is, in addition to hemp, trying to promote marijuana as a legal substance for medicinal use, and he even brings in recreational. He says, you know, it's all about freedom. And he said, Michael, it comes down to this. Hemp is petroleum. Anything that you can make from petroleum, any byproduct that can be made from petroleum, you can make the exact same thing from hemp. Plastic, fuel, it's the core of why it's not legal.
Yeah.
If you were to grow hemp in America for fuel, it would surpass what the Brazilians are doing with sugarcane. It produces more biomass per acre than any plant on earth. And we have, I don't know if I have the exact acreage down, but I was listening to a Department of Agriculture interview on public radio the other day, and the woman who was representing the department said that we currently have in use about 250 million acres of farmland. But we have at our access 800 million acres that we just don't use because we grow enough wheat to feed the world, and it's just farmland that's out there. So when you listen to the news and they're talking about, well, you know, we produce ethanol out of corn, but the Brazilians use sugarcane. Well, guess what? Corn has to have herbicides and pesticides as they produce more corn for more, for more fuel, then they have to use more petrochemical supplies for the herbicides and pesticides. Hemp doesn't use any, doesn't need any. The bugs just don't like it.
Yeah.
So if it was a national mandate that we were going to, you know, shift over to ethanol and biodiesel, the acreage is there. It could be done in just a matter of years. We'd be maybe making more ethanol than you know what to do with. And the wildest thing of all here is that the hemp plant is the only plant that I know of, and I've done a lot of research on it, that produces ethanol and biodiesel. You crush the seeds, and the oil from the seeds is they add a little alcohol to it to make it work, and it's biodiesel. So you have one plant that's producing diesel and ethanol, which is like gasoline.
And then the food on top of that, too.
Pardon?
And then you get the food mass also from the hemp seed that can be made into flour.
Whole Foods Market. And there it is on the shelves, hemp seed oil for human consumption, the hemp protein powder, the D-hold hemp seeds, pure protein. I mean, it's a major food. And a wild thing is the Romanians have been doing this for centuries. And I met some of the Romanian seed stock PhD guys that were at the North American Industrial Hemp Council. And one particular guy, I remember his name because it was like Dracula, but it was Dragula. Common name in Romania, but I remember talking to him in depth. He told me they have a hybrid seed that can grow on any longitude or latitude except the Arctic.
Wow!
So if you're in the mountains of Colorado, they have a seed for you. If you're in Mexico, there's a seed. It doesn't matter where you live, there's a hybrid seed that could be grown in that climate.
Seems like such the answer to so many of our problems that we're facing with fuel shortages and food shortages across the nation and the world, that it only seems logical.
It would be over. I mean, yeah. I used to go to these rallies just to film it. You know, there's even one in the film where we're with Willie and Gatewood, and you can hear somebody in the background say, "Hemp can save the earth."
Yeah.
And when I was first hearing that, I was like, you know, wow, these people are really into this. And then all of a sudden, you know, like a diamond bullet, I just started going, wait a minute. I mean, it just doesn't stop.
I mean,
it's just like food, fiber, fuel, medicine.
Textiles.
The only plant on earth that produces all that.
Yeah.
And when you listen to these broadcasts, you watch the ABC World News, anything, and they're always talking about, you know, we've got to find new ways to make more ethanol. And they bring up, you know, that corn is a feedstock for the animals. And they might throw in, like, switchgrass.
Yeah.
They don't even mention hemp.
Right.
It's almost like the mainstream media is in on the keeping it under wraps. But it's never even mentioned, and it produces more biomass per acre than any other plant on earth. So you think that they would consider it, but it really makes you wonder, you know?
Well, this is what we've got to do is to get the word out. I think when people learn the facts about this, it'll just be inevitable. They'll have to accept the use of hemp in this country.
We're going at it like, you know, we're starting off slow, but we look at it like an assault. I mean, we're going to come out. We want to go to every college, every, you know, there are even some, this guy, I forget his last, I think his last name was Irie, but he produced a film called Skins. And I found out that there's this service that has these 18-wheelers that are actual movie theaters that travel across the country. And Chris Irie, I think is his name, took his film to some of the Native American reservations. I checked into it, and it's real. These are 18-wheeler semi, you know, trucks that have a theater in the back. And we're gonna get the product linked up with this company that does this. And hit the small towns as well. We're going to go to, you name it, we're available. And then when this podcast goes out, I invite anybody who would like this to a screening to take place in their city to contact us through the website. And we can bring speakers. We can go to small towns, big towns, junior colleges, major colleges. A professor here in Dallas is putting it in his, I think you call it a syllabus that they present to the school for a controversial issue to bring to the students, and it could cover every base. I mean, college radio can play our soundtrack, college television can film our politically incorrect Q&A after the screening. We can have the agriculture department involved, the legal department involved, you know, treaty law. It covers everything. So colleges is what we're hoping to extend this to.
Okay, let's give them out the website again in case they want to contact you and bring this to their town.
Yeah, it's Hempsters the Movie. That's Hempsters, plural, hempsterstheMovie.com. And all the contact information's on there.
Okay.
Michael Henning, that's me, sovereignfilms@hotmail.com.
All right, we'll have links to that up at our blog at stash.normal.org. The movie is Hempsters Plant the Seed. You'll learn a whole lot about hemp. And Michael Henning is the director, and we thank you for joining us and giving us a little of your time today.
Thank you, Russ. Anytime.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with a brand new cannabis quote, this one from the Academy Award-winning British actress Helen Mirren. She was quoted in GQ magazine as saying she used to dabble in marijuana and cocaine when she was younger. Quote, "I loved coke. I never did a lot, just a little bit at parties. But what ended it for me was when they caught Nazi war criminal Klaus Barbie, the Butcher of Lyon, in the early 80s. He was hiding in South America and living off the proceeds of being a cocaine baron. And I read that in the paper, and all the cards fell into place, and I saw how my little sniff of cocaine at a party had an absolute direct route to this horrible man in South America." End quote. And what about the marijuana? We can grow that right here and generate no profits for any drug barons. Once again, I hope kids are getting the right message about marijuana. Don't smoke pot, or you too could become an Academy Award winner. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here, and it's great to be back for the Daily Audio Stash. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.